Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build your own perfect clothes with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. I am so thankful to Armoire because I was in a genuine pickle last weekend. I was rushing to New Jersey, shout out NJ, the Garden State, not hunting for new housewives, but going to a friend's baby shower, and I had literally nothing to wear. So thank goodness for Armoire. I opened my bag from Armoire, grabbed this beautiful, bright lime green Sachin and Bobby midi dress, and it fit like a glove, and it saved me all of that extra stress. There are so many benefits to Armoire. You always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, and Armoire is women-founded and women-led. Right now, AGs can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/andyscrolls. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/andyscrolls to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Guys, it's Andy's Girls. I just had the most wonderful night. It's episode 595 maybe. And I just caught up on Orange County. Now, I have to preface this by saying that I had a list of things I intended to do, none of which I did. When it comes to extras, there, Bryce Sander, friend of the pod, has a sit down with Emily and Gina. Plan to watch that in full. Haven't done it yet. Haven't watched Tamara's Watch What Happens Live yet. Haven't watched Emily's Watch What Happens Live yet. I think that there was another thing Orange County related, like their non-after show after show. Haven't watched that yet because I was thinking I was going to start by catching up with last week's Orange County, record an AG, and then catch up with the new Orange County, and I just couldn't do it. As soon as I finished last week's Orange County, I was like, I have to watch the new one now. I have to watch it now and record immediately. And I just need to thank the fine people at Coto de Casa HQ. Because what I just witnessed, I don't even know, as you guys know, not a recap podcast, thank fucking God, because like there was a lot that happened. You watched the episodes, possibly, probably. There was something about the energy where I, unfortunately, I'm coughing so much, but I laughed and then started coughing and then was laugh coughing repeatedly through both episodes. And I can't even share the highlights. So like, spoiler alert, what's happening? What are we listening to? But I do need to say that to whomever thought of the idea of having Katie Janella give a confessional talking about how she was going to talk around telling Alexis, Mrs. Johnny J. Bellino, that you are not going to London and putting that in the smallest of fonts. It It took my breath away, and not just because I'm recovering from pneumonia. It was so funny to me. And then just all of the behaviors exhibited by Jennifer Padronti and Katie Ginella in Alexis Bellino's godforsaken living room, which was designed by karma itself. Never has a mirror table or side table or the color blue looked so cheap and so wonderful as it has in the home that apparently Johnny J is maybe helping with. Johnny J gives me like utility energy. Like, you've got the mortgage, you've got the rent. I'm going to cover Con Ed, whatever the California version of Con Ed is. Like, I don't really see this man assisting in a havesies kind of way. You know how I know that? Because in one of the flashbacks, either from the newest episode or the episode before, there's a flashback of Alexis saying, essentially, I'll write her a check for the Ferragamo shoes that Shannon bought John. It's nice that custody is being exchanged. So now, instead of Shannon being John's primary provider, he has Alexis. It's not a conversation of like, he could deduct $400 if they were purchased on sale from $70,000 to $75,000. No, no, Alexis has it. It's a fascinating way of doing business in the fine world of love. Also considering the fact that like, there's an acknowledgement here that Shannon paid for things, which is really, truly going to kick her in the ass. And also the shock reveal of John Jansen and Alexis Bellino's confessional at the end of the episode. I was shaken by it because it's so funny. And then Alexis Bellino is like overcome with emotion, and I have felt empathy for her. I've expressed it on this podcast / social experiment, shall I say. But when she started to cry and say she was quitting the show because she herself has decided to date a man who's like so focused, not on this lady he likes or whatever, but on his ex-girlfriend to such an extent that this man is costing her their shared check, I guess, for being on Orange County. He's costing her, I would assume, an equal, if not more substantial amount of money by refusing to drop the lawsuit than anything that he would have recouped from Shannon giving him 30% of her face back. Like, it doesn't, I mean, talk about a face off, number one. It doesn't make sense. She's going to lose more money than he would get back by quitting the show. Like, are we all on the same page with that? But then she's escorting sort of Katie and Jen out the door. It's giving a little air of please leave, like throwback to Heather Dubrow and Shannon Bedore. Like, I'm getting that kind of energy. And then I might have been hearing this wrong, but was that not like the security system for the door saying front door, front door? The expression from Katie and Jen of like performative calm, their behaviors during that whole thing of like, hey girl, how are you? Great, awesome. You might have a text message right now that we knew to expect because that's the reason that we're filming this scene, but we're here to comfort you maybe because that's what we're supposed to do. Like, we're on the side of empathy for Alexis because no one else was available to do it and Tamara isn't believable enough. So we're here just as like a Flotsam and Jetsam mixed with like Glinda the Good Witch. Like, I love Katie and Jen. I love them. Katie, I swear to God, if anybody says anything about her being a one season wonder, I will riot. Like, I love Katie on this show. I love her energy with Jen. And there was just something about them together. There was this like yearning discomfort, but also I felt a little bit of like a wink in their eyes of like, hey girl, like we're here to pretend to be your good friends. And I'm sure they feel affection for her. I think they are also both a little afraid of her, understandably so, because we don't know what John will do. And there was just something so funny about it. And I'm so sorry because I think that Alexis, I know that Alexis is really upset. Like, I know that she believes she's the victim here. Is she being sued? No. Is it possible she was maybe helping with some strategy here behind the scenes? Yeah. Is she choosing to date this man? So wouldn't you think she's already won? Because he's the prize, right? Johnny J is the prize. It's not being on the show. It's not forming a fake friendship or whatever with Shannon. I mean, sending the bouquet at the birthday, I think for me would have gone down better had we not seen the Margaret Joseph's floral delivery, which was more of a shock and I think funnier. So Alexis's flower delivery was obviously an attempt to get like attention on her birthday. And I did appreciate that there was a lower third to like literal olive branch, which was another time that I laughed. And Shannon opening the note and me going back and watching her opening the note four times because there was a card inside of the note unrelated to a note that I thought looked like a folded over check. So then I started thinking, wait a second, in addition to this lovely card about an olive branch and moving forward, except the love of my life, who I strongly support, is suing your ass. Did she also include a check for the shoes because her boyfriend can't afford to like reimburse Shan? Or maybe there's a legal precedent around, of all the bitches, of all the conversations around like, how can I best emasculate Eddie? How can I best emasculate Ryan? The only bitch that I see on screen, aside from most of these women, is Johnny J. So I just, not to be a conspiracy theorist, but I need someone to find out before the reunion, or actually don't do this because I want to be surprised. Is it possible that there was in fact a folded up check in that card? Or was it just an additional note card that a lot of florists give that was also included in the note, maybe with like the florist information or something? That is also entirely possible. But is it also possible there was a check for some shoes in there? 100%, I think, except probably not, but maybe is the takeaway that I have in watching this episode. There was just something about it. I am moved by Orange County. This energy, it's intoxicating to me. I want to bottle it and spray it. Like Jenna fucking Lyons says she has bad BO. We need the world to be cleansed with the fragrance that is this season of Orange County. It's floral. If an olive tree has a scent, let's throw that shit in there too. Couple branches. An orchid, my personal least favorite flower, but like throw some shit in there as well. The edible flowers, which there's a difference between an edible flower and a delicious flower. And if I was, who's the person that actually ate the edible flower? I think it was Katie. If I was Katie eating an edible flower, I would think the reason this is available is not because I'm gonna be able to like digest it. It's because I'm going to be able to digest it. And it's also fun to eat, like it's yummy or something. So that was a fun reveal that it's an edible flower, but not a delicious flower. I don't know. News to me. Like, couldn't it be rose? I don't know. We like rose macaroons. So like macaron laudere. Couldn't we put some, you know, pastry droplets or something on that shit? Make it taste like the sugar version of a rose instead of an actual rose. Will never be as sweet. I mean, it was this doubleheader. I think it restored my faith in recovering from this pneumonia. I think it was in fact the cure. I think that I've never been so delighted to be so seemingly, I felt like I was like trapped in weeks behind, because I was quite literally weeks behind in Orange County. And I'm so thankful. Shannon's dress reveal, the dress, because I thought to myself, she dressing in all black for your 60th like birthday celebration that you yourself are organizing was to me an odd choice. It was giving a little too mindful and demure, but also funeral-y. Like, I'm like, are we mourning our 50s right now? What's happening? We know that Shannon, my sweet queen, well, I mean, sweet TBD, but like wonderful broken bird, my queen, you know, cradling sweet Archie in bed, offering him a bedtime carrot. Nothing broke my heart, but also restored my faith. This woman is not alone, okay? She is the best therapist on that planet. That golden retriever or other thing, not Labrador, golden retriever, he is a king. He has been through war. Archibald Bedore has seen things that we should be so lucky to never see. And he is with her. Shannon is never alone when Archie is there. Archie, we should be so lucky to have Archie living in all of us. In fact, I have a painting that an AG sent me. They did a little oil painting of Archie that Shannon signed in the office when she wrote Archie hearts you. And then she stopped writing. I was like, oh no, you need to like sign it with your name. She's like, no, but I did because I put Archie hearts you. I was like, no, Shannon, you need to like add Shannon. So she added it right underneath. And I'm looking at him now. Like, he has a hold over all of us. He does feel as close to a human person as a dog can be, but maybe the gift that God gave him was the ability to like not speak in human English. Because I think if he could, I think his capacity for like trauma bonding and emotional support would deplete him more. Like, let's just give this little gentleman a bedtime carrot, snuggle up with mom, who's also his best friend and his sister, and just let them have a shared communal experience. Because I know that that dog is an empath. You can tell. You know how like there's that whole thing 101 Dalmatians where like the owners look like their pets? Archie Bedore spiritually is Shannon's twin, but fraternal. Like, he doesn't necessarily feel things the way that Shannon does, but he understands her more than any of us ever will. Apologies to Stella and Adeline and Sophia, but Archie Bedore gets it. He is one with Shan. And while my heart broke for her that she was not invited to Katie Janella's dinner party, which actually I loved. And Katie's house, not enough attention has been focused on the fact that her outdoor space. Now, I'm a New Englander, so we're not used to houses that open up into like just the absolute backyard. It's fucking stunning. Wherever she lives in Wherever'sville is gorgeous. And the layout, the tablescape, A++ sublime. But I did feel for Shan when the frame is like cutting from Katie talking about the dinner party and setting up to like poor sweet Shan with the scrunchie, Sex in the City style. Nobody wears one except now we do. But back in the time in which Sex in the City, that episode, that iconic episode aired, nobody was wearing a scrunchie. Now we all do. I don't, because I don't have one, but I would happily wear one. I wouldn't, but I would absolutely consider it. And I love, I'm an ally to scrunchy wearers. I personally don't wear one, which is weird because I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And I know my fellow youth harken back to 90s early aughts core as a part of their personality. And so I would be 100% into that, but I just, not enough to do it. But I fully support it. And there's something about Shannon with her hair pulled back so we could see her beautiful, priceless, but also part of the $70,000, but also priceless face work. She looks gorgeous. She's sliving. Shannon Bedore is sliving, Paris Hilton style. And just her putting herself together, taking the spackle out, doing whatever, her nighttime routine, cuddling up with Archie, because Katie didn't invite her to couples night because she thought Shannon would feel too alone. Give Shannon the option to decide that for herself, Katie Janella. I don't know why I'm using her full name. I love her so much. Just give her the chance to decide for herself. Say, I'm having couples night. Unfortunately, we don't have room for the dog. So, because, you know, Archie, he comes with a lot of emotional baggage and there just wasn't an extra seat at the table. So, Shan, would you like to come alone? since you're alone, or would you like to not do that? I mean, isn't there a way to approach this? Especially if Alexis isn't there, what's the harm in having Shan? Except if they wanted to talk about Shan, but they really did. I mean, they did talk about Shan, but like, it was more about Ryan and Eddie's dick off, which we'll get to, than it was about Shan. And I felt to myself like, oh, that's not fun when you feel like you haven't been invited to stuff because you don't have a plus one to come with. Let her bring a friend. She has a core four. I don't know if she's part of the core four or if the core four makes her five, but that's at least three people for her to contact. Or bring her dad. We love him. Gene, I think, maybe, or Fred. We love that man. He loves boats. They grew up on them. Like, bring him. He's a gentleman fella. Maybe don't, actually, because I think the energy that Tamara was displaying is probably not appropriate for seniors. And so maybe we should not have that happen. But I was really appreciative. I was really appreciative for this double hitter. I could not be more all over the place because I honestly think I'm in a different plane of existence having watched both of those episodes in a row. Let's circle back to the first episode. But they're actually kind of connected. Heather seems to feel confused or upset that she's being held to a different standard, which is funny to me because she is being held to a different standard. It's typically a standard that benefits Heather. So for her to complain that she seems to like have to be perfect or I'll be judged while she is usually edited as close to perfect as humanly possible and finds a way to like strategize and navigate being in hot water at a different level than most, let alone questions of her behavior in previous seasons and how that being held to a different standard seemed to protect her in a certain kind of edit, is fascinating to me. But I loved the karmic flip side of her saying, don't admonish me, to Terry Dubrow when he was going to get his nose zhuzhed. Because obviously she didn't expect, while being mic'd, I think that there's probably a certain expectation that housewives have after a period of time of like, you know, I'm going to say something and it's like, quote unquote, off camera. And I know I'm being mic'd, but it's not going to be used. And that probably has helped Heather Dubrow before. Like, she's probably said things that have been maybe critical or breaking the fourth wall that haven't been used. And with that, maybe she's built up some trust or whatever else that she thinks means this stuff won't be used. And it's kind of nice to burst that bubble a little bit. Like, I'm very appreciative that she included it. And I also thought to myself, with what so many other couples have shared with us on reality TV, the fact that Heather, watching her like advanced screen or maybe the ep when it aired, watching that moment and seeing it included in the episode, my guess is she wasn't thrilled with it, but it is also kind of an LOL to me because I didn't think that Terry was admonishing her. I thought that Terry was, God forbid, talking to his wife and maybe criticizing her. I don't think, I've only watched it once instead of my usual 16 times, but I didn't feel like he was overstepping or being like, or wilding out. I think that their standard for wilding out is probably more closer to normal than other housewife marriages. So it is kind of funny to me to imagine Heather getting maybe a little perturbed, a little annoyed that that moment was included in the episode, because what other people have had to live through and experience is so much worse than that. And maybe this is just my own little imagination station of thinking she's going to be upset, but I think we all know she's going to be upset. There was something fascinating about that moment. Also, poor Shannon butt dialing Tamara. I actually couldn't believe that it was happening when it was happening. And this is how you know, and maybe Shannon reflecting back understands this, Tamara ensuring that cameras caught the full butt dial and not ever saying to her friend, I think you're butt dialing me. In fact, what I think happened is Tamara, did she not press her phone, like disconnect and then called Shannon back. She didn't interrupt because she didn't want, I think, this soundbite to be hurt. She didn't want this thing to stop happening, especially when someone else is recording the interaction. So she just let it ride. And I just couldn't believe, of all the moments in which a butt dial to happen, for it to happen at that point. It was wild to me. And for cameras plus somebody taking a second angle, which looked like it was being done with an iPhone. So I don't exactly know what that production setup was, but I do know that poor Shan is so fucking broken at this point. I don't know what to say about questions around, was Alexis conspiring and behind the people release? I think it's an easy and probably understandable connection to say Alexis did this, but I don't agree with that. And here's why. Because if you think of the fact that John Jansen put out a press statement to his pals at people.com, which Tamara called a reputable news outlet, which is fun. If you understand and have that memory, as Shannon herself also does, that when Shannon and John broke up, John Jansen, a notoriously private businessman, did put his business on full display, on display each and every day, by putting out a press statement saying, I, a private businessman who does not like attention, would like the world to know that I have broken up with my gal. We wish each other the best and will apparently continue fucking until some point after she drives her car into a home. There is something to be said for consistency in behavior. So do I think that Alexis, that John leaned in and used whatever PR team Shannon says that Alexis has? No, I think John texted his friend or contact at People and was like, guess who bought Miguel a face and wants at least the forehead back? That's what I think happened. I can't believe I haven't coughed in like several minutes. Wild. I think that he did the thing he's already done, which was try to get attention and either completely misunderstand what good guy behavior might look like, or genuinely be someone who has gotten addicted to a certain kind of niche fame and wants to continue that path. Not to say you can't like fall in love with a lady and find out, oh my God, she might be back on the show, as he has seemingly with Alexis. I'm sure he also likes her an awful lot. But there is something to be said for having a type, and that type having a bio on BravoTV.com. And maybe John wants one. I mean, there's something so funny to me about John Jansen being someone who sends press statements of his like day-to-day activity with People, or like leaks information, which I'm sure he does as well, and also films confessionals, and also attends, I think, almost every press commitment that Alexis had when she was most recently here in New York, and I assume doing stuff in LA. John Jansen is a guy who likes to like stand near the camera and stare. Maybe for support, because he's such a great support system. That's it. But also is able to film confessionals for this TV show, even though he really, really needs his privacy. You know how I know he needs his privacy? Because he tells media outlets that so many times. He needs to be private. And for us to know how important his privacy is, he needs to communicate that publicly to blogs and tabloids and maybe podcasts. A girl can hope. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And like many people, the conversation about saving and investing can feel really complicated. And for me personally, often feels like it's out of reach. Like I'm joining a conversation in the middle of it. I'm not quite sure really how to start, which is why I am so thankful for Acorns. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future.
You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. BCC, PK, and Dorit. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. That's perfect for me and my life. I want to make positive change, but so often it's hard to figure out where to begin. Acorns does that work. I always felt like in order to start investing, I needed to have one big lump sum, but Acorns takes away that kind of stress. It's small, important changes that you can make in your life for your future. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month, dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndyScrolls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndyScrolls for 15% off today. There are so many moments that make up a year. The big moments and milestones, birthdays, anniversaries, when Shan came to the Clawfist. And then there are the small moments, the slow morning spent making a decadent breakfast, running to a grocery store to get 9 lemons to put in a bowl. All of these moments come together to create our year and in the end, create our life. Artifact Uprising wants to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. Whether you want to say, I love you with the perfect gift, display favorite memories in your home, or connect with loved ones throughout the year, BCC Shan, they have a product you can personalize. Artifact Uprising is a Colorado-based company that creates premium quality, customizable photo goods for your digital photos. I just ordered a few photo books with Artifact Uprising, a hardcover travel photo book in this gorge shade of Pacific blue, which is perfect for the credenza in my living room, devoted to my first ever trip to Paris, and a photo book in midnight blue, one for myself and for my family. Moments from my childhood, my parents spending time together, it is going to be the perfect gift for Tobes and Chard. This is something incredibly special that will keep us connected. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, AGs can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you've purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code AndyScrolls through December 31. And also is hiding in the bedroom of Alexis's home, which he's, I guess, moved into or whatever. I'm sure he helped with that mirrored furniture. He's like, how many more times can I look at my face? Oh, when I'm dropping a drink on this little side table? Great, I'm all in. He's hiding in the bedroom because he doesn't want to, I don't know, possibly be embarrassed by like welcoming two gals into the house that he's probably thinking are up to no good or not. Because he's so focused on maintaining control. There's something magical about watching this whole combination go down. And while I love my sweet queen, my wonderful,
broken. Like, I love her so much. I feel her energy. I think at points, not to like talk myself up, but I am a little bit of a human Archie Bador. We should all aspire to be at the level of grace and humanity that Archie Bador, a literal dog, we should be so lucky, could experience. But like, aside from living that actual dog's life, I'm there. And there's just something about this season. I mean, I don't want to thank Alexis. I really don't. And I don't want Shannon to suffer in this way, because I genuinely feel like she's being terrorized. I really do. This is unbelievable what's happening to her. But also the television experience as an outsider is wild, because there's a lot of like heavy fucking shit that's going on, loaded feelings, intense feelings, and then these moments of humor that undercut it and just bring it to a different level. If this was another franchise, God forbid, the thing that's going on in Franklin Lakes that's kind of annoying is they lost their sense of humor. It's like the sense of humor is so scattered, and sometimes the LOL is like, oh my God, you're still able to have fun when you guys are at fucking war 24/7. Like, there's something wonderful about what is happening in Orange County, because there's able to be light. It's not even like light that catches or creeps in. Sometimes there's chunks of light that happen that make me laugh. And I don't know that I have laughed louder, except again, I did have these like laughing, coughing fits, than the scene in at the dinner. It's not really a dinner party from hell. I mean, I would have fucking loved to be there, heaven sent. But when Tamara's having one too many Tamartinis and is getting her own version of Naked Wasted, but it's like Naked Truth, there was something fascinating about, first off, her accusations toward Ryan about him saying these terrible things about her parenting, and Eddie. And it has become abundantly clear that Tamara's not listening to stuff she's upset about. What's happening is this assistant that she referenced on one of the two episodes I watched, who, have we ever met this person? Maybe we did, and I honestly forget. Can we meet them again, please? Because I need to see some of these scenes of like an assistant maybe, or a part-time publicist, intern, whatever, or maybe are they followers who are reaching out, tagging Tamara and things, and she's just like way too fucking online. But Tamara's saying all of these things that maybe she believes, because maybe she like Googled Reddit or something and someone said, oh, Ryan talks shit about Tamara's family. What's the experience like of Tamara Judge watching this episode, seeing that, like, yeah, the host of the podcast were asking leading questions and sharing their opinion of like Tamara and maybe like Tamara being a bad mom or something. They are sharing their opinion, as they have every right to do. But Ryan, to his credit, I didn't think was really biting on this. Like, he could have really followed suit and been shitty, but he sort of went out of his way not to. He said at one point when they were saying something about like Tamara and her house or whatever, or her household rather, or whatever, he said, that's a tough one for me to answer. The last thing I would do is speculate. How are you upset at this man? Tamara, I think, it's like not facial blindness. Does she have person intent impact blindness? Because I do believe that she believes her truth, but the fact that this woman can't find the time to listen to a fucking soundbite, you know that if any of this shit went viral, it's very easy to find the timestamps. Someone has done that work on her behalf. So is it that she knows she's wrong and she's doing it anyway, and she's just such a good actor, she's proving it to herself? Or is she just so fucking lazy? But she's not. Tamara is many things, but she's not lazy. But maybe a little bit when it comes to information seeking, she has no interest in actually listening to this stuff. Tamara, your drags would be so much better if you could actually cite information that happened, except maybe not, because she sort of doesn't need to do that work. All she has to present is something happened, whether or not it did, and I'm going to make it 1,000 times worse. She did this with the Radio Andy shit. There was a caller that called in that said some stuff about Alexis and maybe Tamara, and Tamara felt that on a live radio show on Radio Andy, the host, who's in no way able, the host, first off, is not vetting questions or information that's coming in from callers. And also people can skirt that. And also people have the right to express their opinion. And to blame the host and say essentially the host needs to get fired because a caller, I talked about this on a previous AG, because a caller called in and suggested she sucks is insane to me. And Tamara's done so much worse than what she's accusing other people of doing. Tamara said so much worse on Orange County Housewives about Ryan than what she's accusing him of doing. When you note what he actually said, she's accusing him of doing things that are probably equally as bad as stuff that she has done to him, arguably worse, except it didn't happen. And then she references a meme that he shared of like the only Ryan whose behavior Tamara should be concerned with, alongside a photo of Tamara's deeply troubled oldest son, Ryan. The laugh that came out of my body, because I don't think I had ever seen that. I don't know who came up with it. Ryan, as in Jen Pedranti's Ryan, is not smart enough to. So he shared something that I was shaken. I laughed so hard. And then the follow-up, I was like, oh shit, what am I laughing at? Because Tamara then says, no, you're referencing my son, which, spoiler alert, he absolutely was. And then you're referencing a dick pic that was distributed as revenge porn. And I was like, oh my God, that's terrible. Also, I had no idea that happened. She's talking about something that happened, I think she said when he was 18, I think she said 10 years ago, but I don't know if he's older or younger than that. But when he was 18, right on the cusp, and regardless, incredibly inappropriate for anyone to share or distribute another person's genitalia without their consent, like wild. And then I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I just laughed about this meme, but I had no idea about the dick pic. Then they do a flash of the meme again. There is an emoji of a dick in a camera. And I'm like, oh my God. And she's saying he linked to Ryan's dick pic or information about it from a decade ago. This is nuts behavior. So then I'm rolling back the laughter, trying to get that out of my system. Easy to do when you spend a lot of time coughing. What comes in, coughs out. And then it occurs to me, let me just head on over to Google to see what the fuck is happening. So I Google a couple words to just try to like figure out information of what's going on. And it turns out that that photo of Ryan and the link with the like emoji of the camera and the dick goes to dckpic.shop, dickpic.shop, which is an e-commerce site. So don't say that Ryan doesn't have a career on the up and up, because I guess he and Jen Pedranti are selling hashtag dickpic hats and other maybe apparel. And I have a photo, one that they consented to taking and are using for marketing, of America's sweetheart Jen Pedranti looking gorgeous in a black bikini, holding a trucker hat that says hashtag DCKPIC over what I assume is her now fiance's package, while he pretends to take a photo of it. So they've tried to monetize dick pic because of what we remember being a pretty big moment from last season, where Ryan had been accused of sending a dick pic to a lady and he just said, oh no, my bad. I I meant it for someone else in my address book or something. So they've tried to monetize that, which I appreciate. But I guess in order to make this acceptable socially, they've taken out the I in dick. So it's dick pic, DCKPIC. And again, let's not forget the hashtag. And they've done a marketing campaign that involves Ryan appearing nearly naked. So what he did in that Instagram story was not in any way reference revenge porn or a case of suspected alleged revenge porn against Tamra's oldest and, again, deeply troubled son, Ryan something or other. Forgot his last name. Apologies. Ryan Cowboy. What he was actually doing was selling his own merch. For Tamra to not understand that because she didn't actually go to the link. So I assume once again in her imagination or this alleged assistant or a follower to maybe connect those dots, or maybe Tamra just did this in her free time, how she could associate him selling a hashtag DCK pick, let's all say it together, pick merch hat into him trying to exploit and distribute information about a revenge porn case against her son when he was 18. That's a wild accusation. I know that he sent her a letter accusing her of defamation after she said, you know, she attempted a terrible joke on Watch What Happens that she unfortunately delivered quite poorly. She should have honestly got a defamation letter for fucking up the LOL, not just the, you know, distribution of inaccurate information. And apologies to Ryan and Jimbalina's lawyers if they're listening, and honestly, Taste. There is something unbelievable about her accusing him of sharing information about her son if he didn't do that at all and was just trying to sell a poorly designed trucker hat. How do you connect those dots without actually seeing any of the dots? How do you do that? Tamra's so smart. Does she just think we're all fucking dumb? I mean, she's like probably 50% correct, maybe 49. I'll give us the up on this. There's something so insane about that. Unless, and I'm adding a big unless there was something else relating to her son's dick that I missed that Ryan shared. But if this is a guy who goes on a podcast and when he's been given, honestly, one of Archie Bedore's nighttime carrots and been like, I'm going to throw this to you, nosh on it if you want, of like saying shit about Tamra, and he doesn't go to the level that she would while yawning, and she says that he was exploiting and distributing images related to her son's body that was distributed without his consent, and she thinks he's like sharing media about that. How do you not know that that's true? Don't you need to know that that's true? Unless it somehow is, but like the Google of it all, I mean, hello, America's lawyer, is telling me that it's probably closer to the dick pic shop that he has. I assume that the reason Ryan didn't immediately follow up in the moment and be like, what are you talking about, is because he was so confused. And my guess is he's probably had a couple Instagram stories trying to sell this trucker hat, which, do I need one for the Clawfist? No, I absolutely do not. But there's something to me that feels like he was probably a little too perplexed in that moment. And God bless him. That was a tough night for him. Okay. Would you like an FBI shout out along with that martini? I mean, he was shaken and stirred. Poor Jen Padronti, another LOL that I had. When Tamra references the FBI, which is a shocking thing to reference at this point in time. I know that she shows up to talk about trucker hats. I know that she shows up to filming with like an FBI style trucker hat after the news comes out as an LOL. But for her to reference this well before anybody has on camera and to see the look on Emily's face, because Emily knows all of the facts of what's going on, I'm sure Shane was aware of this as well. So like Emily's fully prepared to ask just like curious questions about, yeah, so tell me more about your friend who you're going to Vegas with. And Jen, poor, poor, sweet Jen Pedronti's face. She did the thing that who among us has not done this, where you're either in the middle of a lie or you're just so freaked out that something is happening and you're afraid of attention going on you that you cannot breathe or move. Because you're like, if I swallow, everyone is going to see it and it's going to be seen like over sonar for miles and miles and miles that I gulped. So I can't do that. The way she was perfectly still and like, FBI, what do you mean? Was an iconic non-response. And I don't know if Tamara walked into that scene and was like, it's going to include something about the FBI. Maybe she thought it wouldn't. My guess is she needed a little bit of that liquid courage, you know, a seltzer, because she doesn't really drink. There was something about it that was so fascinating, as well as Ryan's terrible, terrible response, which is like, and I swear to God, I've known information about this case. And every time I think about it, I'm like, what's happening? Baseball, something, money, gambling, stealing, yada, which I'm not accusing Ryan of doing. I'm just saying that the case in general is just feels more complicated the more I think about it. I guess it's just like me thinking as Tamara would about an imaginary podcast. So I find myself slightly confused when I'm like trying to recall all the details here, but Ryan's explanation being like, no, it's just there's something happening with a good friend, which I'm sure this person, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't really know. Good friend, yada, yada. But the language that he used of like, yeah, I travel to Vegas with him a lot. I'm fortunate to enjoy those fruits. And I just gut instinct was like, you didn't use that phrase, because I just immediately instinctively was thinking, you know, from a poisonous tree, because he's just, there was something about it where I was like, Ryan, how do you not, if you know that something is happening or not, because nothing's going on, but like your friend is maybe in hot water or whatever, his explanation of the offense was not the best. But I think also Ryan doesn't come off great on camera as, you know, the bedazzler. He likes gems on a jean jacket, but sometimes with the words, they don't quite glisten, or maybe they glisten a little bit too much. Like him telling his resume to Matt, and I hope this was the edit, but did he follow up at any point and be like, hey, Matt, what do you do? Oh, you write about golf? Cool. Back to me doing mortgage stuff, but not just that. And then COVID happened, and also real estate development and all these different units, but also mortgages. And how are we today? There was something about it that I don't know. It was honestly was magical. This experience tonight, it healed me. I still do have, you know, a mass in my stomach or whatever, but like this really did make me feel great. Honestly, it really did. I forget anything that happened other than that, although there were a couple of things that I want to note. What Emily Simpson of Emily and Shane Simpson LLC, oh no, Esquire. Well, probably also LLC, but Esquire. What Emily has done to advance conversation around an organization that she has been aligned with for several years, has shared information and resources. I'm going to include a link in the show notes for this episode to the Innocence Center. What she has done, the way that she continues to use her voice to talk about injustices in the legal system, and the fact that the system is broken and set up to fail, and having a scene with this gentleman who just got out of prison after, I think he said, 18 years after being accused of attempted murder, which was actually done by his half brother who didn't step in when he was on trial because he's like, well, I know you're innocent, so the jury will. And this man then being like, I'm just grateful to be here. And we're getting him a suit. We're like getting him, acclimating him back to society, bringing attention to that. There's something so impressive and important about Emily using her legal background and her current celebrity platform to talk about something that I don't think has certainly been talked about this consistently at this scale, LOL, ever on Orange County. When it comes to like this kind of matter, like it's one of those things when people are like, I don't like to talk about politics, but life is political. What Emily is doing, which is calling attention to this enormous problem with great disadvantages to people of color, it's just, I just really find it incredibly impressive. I really genuinely do. And I'm appreciative that she has stayed consistent with this organization. I'm appreciative that while she's not using her legal degree in the way that she used to, she's using it in this way to give back to her community, to give back to communities outside of her own. I think it's incredibly impressive. I'm really appreciative for it, just as a total outsider, to be like, you're helping inform me as a viewer at home. I just think it's absolutely outstanding.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy is an incredible tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them. For me, I'm always nervous about the unknown. But sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears in the first place and holding ourselves back. For me, therapy has been an incredible motivating part of my life. It has helped me personally, professionally, with the podcast, learning more about myself, how to improve setting boundaries, working through problems, big and small. It has been the single best tool in my life to better my life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/andyscrolls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/AndyScrolls. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images, because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still, 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise. Love don't cost it a thing, but I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to JLo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that JLo glow for yourself with JLo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is JLo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing. Easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try JLo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that JLo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls. Much like Jennifer Aiden on her last appearance on Watch What Happens Live, and I do mean last, when it comes to summer, I need to keep hydrated, and that's why I love Fiji water. Jen's thirst might not ever be quenched, but with Fiji water, mine always is. Fiji water is Earth's finest water. Unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature soft, smooth taste. And that's why Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S. And P.S., Fiji water has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH. Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today. Alexis Bellino, imagine how much better her season could have gone if she had just simply quenched that thirst. And my recommendation?
It's not just water, it's Fiji water. I also think Heather Dubrow, who I really genuinely appreciate, is so outside of the universe of understanding empathy when it comes to Emily trying to express upon her frustration and her upset and the trigger of like attending the fashion show and bringing with her certain, you know, fears, concerns, paranoia that come from a place that I think many people can understand, but also not fully appreciate because we haven't been on the scale, meaning the celebrity scale that Emily has. I think the way that women on Housewives are treated by the audience, let alone members of their cast, is reprehensible. The things that people will say and do because they either don't think that Emily will read the comments or just such pieces of shit that they don't give a fuck and they also think maybe their opinion matters of a literal stranger's weight is unbelievable to me. If you want to say something shitty to a stranger on the internet because you think they deserve it and you think, well, you know, they have a big enough platform, they can deal with it. All right. If you want to do that, that's your prerogative, you know, up to you. But don't maybe just set the bare minimum standard of being a human person, especially women who are commenting these things. Don't mention a person's weight. It's obviously the comments that were shown on the episode were intentionally like hyper, hyper malicious, but I'm guessing there are many more where those are coming from. And this is a woman who's now saying to us directly, please stop doing that. It is affecting how I view myself. It's also affecting how she's doing her job because I'm thinking probably Inception style in Emily's head is like, I'm both unnerved about my experience at this fashion show. I'm also probably unnerved about how this episode is going to be shown and how I am going to look quite literally to the audience. It's layers and layers here. And I think most people can appreciate that. And I think that's why where some of these comments might come from, it's probably a combination of people being like absolute pieces of shit and also projecting. Like if you can't control yourself or your view of how your body should look, you feel like you should have control over another person's. And because they are on reality TV and they, you know, volunteer to put themselves on this platform, we can judge them accordingly. Can we not just set the standard of don't talk about a person's weight? Is that really the hardest thing in the world for some people to do? If you want to be a dick, welcome to Bravo. There are so many people who say wildly reprehensible things about housewives and whatever. Some of them have podcasts, some of them have thriving social media accounts, some of them don't, and they have finstas. Like, you do you, however you want to participate in this world. I would rather talk about Archie Bador for an hour and a half. Maybe that's not the most entertaining thing in the world. That's just my personality quirk. Lord knows I have flaws, so I'm not saying I'm at a different standard. I'm just saying, can we just choose a different thing to be shitty about? Like, the harm that does to not only Emily, which is enough, but other people seeing your comments is like so fucked up. And I'm really appreciative that Emily, it's like breaking the fourth wall, whatever, that Emily shared that with us, because I do think that there's a responsibility that the audience refuses to take for our own toxicity that maybe now and again we should. Like, maybe the standard is don't do that about, don't mention a person's weight and try to body or fat shame them. You have no idea of how harmful that can be, especially if you think that you can get away with it because you're an anonymous person behind a Finsta or some fucking dog account. And, you know, again, not to besmirch dogs, because His Holiness Archie Bador is looking down on me at this point through this little oil painting miniature. So, you know, I will post a photo of this along with the episode graphic on Instagram. There was just something about it that I found profoundly sad. And it's something that, I don't know, I'm sure Heather Dubrow gets a lot of shit on her social, but I don't think she understands this particular kind of shit. And I'm not taking away from challenges that she's faced. As she said in a confessional, I'm a woman, but I just don't know that she has experienced specifically what Emily is talking about, which is also specific to her experience as a woman on the cast of Real Housewives of Orange County, who does not quite literally fit a specific ideal that has been presented to us previously of what an Orange County Real Housewife looks like. It has been pretty consistent. Not overwhelmingly, but like pretty consistent for a number of years. And I just don't know that Heather quite understands it. And the thing that really fucking pisses me off is she goes over at Shannon's, you know, birthday tea funeral, and she's dropping off her gift, the beautiful Hermes sandals sitting Shiva for Shannon's 50s. And she wants to have this conversation with Emily. And this is where I was like, Gina, you have so many fucking gold stars for this episode. And I really appreciate you calling out the thing that some of us were thinking or not, which is Heather needs to maintain control. And she's very strategic for when she wants to have specific conversations, which, yeah, you could also say who among us, like I think many housewives think that way, but Heather certainly does. And maybe she's more successful, less successful in trying to condition us and like communicate when empathy and listening is available, when like her, you know, back in 5 minutes, like coffee shop sign turns and it's like, oh, we're open for service. Like Heather's now ready for a grande cup of truth. And I appreciated Gina's confessional being like, this is strategy. This is not. It's empathy on Heather's terms. So she sits down. Emily is sharing with her the reasons she felt triggered, examples of things that she found herself very upset over. Heather's allegedly communicating that she understands. She does the thing that Emily wanted her to do, which is to say, I hear you, which is important. And maybe it was just too complicated for her to say that when Emily previously talked to her, because it was at a group event, Heather felt attacked. It was just too much at that moment for her to understand what was happening. And there's something to be said for Heather finally doing the thing and it being like a softer conversation. But you lose me entirely when you think about the fact that technically, two episodes prior at the fashion show, Heather had a confessional filmed how many months after the sit down with Emily, where Emily is sharing all of the reasons that she felt upset, including quite literally seeing a number on a dress that she said that she felt did not fit her size in other designer clothing. And for Heather knowing exactly what was triggering to Emily, because it was spelled out for her, to just go for that undercut punch was just so especially shitty. Because at that point, you can't argue you don't understand. And Heather is still tracking with her, like, I need to just be truthful. You know, she says she's upset about it being a 12, but it, you know, was kind of tight on her, is such a shitty thing to say, because you know that Emily is being, sure, literal about the number 12 versus a number 6, but she's also sharing why that was upsetting to her. She's sharing the fact that she didn't feel seen. And Heather is communicating to her in that confessional, yeah, I still don't see you. And I actually maybe do see you, I just don't give a fuck. It's just so fucking cold. And Heather Dubrow is cold. She's also, you know, she has capacity for whatever, but she can be cold. She actually is similar to Tamra in more ways than I would initially give her credit for, in a way that like makes me feel sad, because I really genuinely like Heather Dubrow, but there are some absolute blind spots that she has, and this is one of them. Damn. I just kind of felt like, girl, did we need to do this? It didn't help her, I think, with some members of the audience to have this like, ooh, cool, calm, collected conversation, because we just saw what you decided to do months later, 2 weeks ago. And it landed. That confessional moment landed too fucking much. But then you know what? We got an olive, a quite literal olive branch, which with a lower third that said literal olive branch, delivered from Alexis with a maybe or maybe not check and a birthday card. And I really appreciated that. I appreciated that moment. I also appreciated Shannon, you know, sharing a draft message of speaking of a dear John, of a dear Alexis. I have friends, they're not you, I think you're a loser, go get your own scone, which was funny. And also her follow-up text was funny. Sorry, Alexis. But it was a longer communicated version of like, cheerio, not just the cereal, but us going to Europe. Not with you though, boo, because I still hate you because you are, you know, fucking my ex. I don't understand why Alexis would think she'd go on the trip. I mean, I get it because you're, you know, technically on the show, but you're also a friend of, which is gray area for cash trips. Sometimes you're there, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you have an array of Gucci glasses and then you get promoted to full time. You know, we can't all Angie K in this universe. Some of us have to Monica. And so what can I say? I mean, it's a tough break for Alexis, but doesn't she win, right? Because she got the man. So isn't that enough for you? I mean, maybe she was promised the trip or not. I don't entirely understand her upset at the end of the episode. I think she understood that sending a ridiculously oversized orchid olive tree branch parade with a like, happy birthday, you're old now, I'm gonna go fuck John, you know, deuces. I don't know why she would think that would actually give her an olive branch. I also don't think she's being coached by John. I think she is talking to John, maybe coached. I mean, honestly, if her behavior is so much similar to Shannon's behavior, and I guess, yeah, it kind of is. I don't know how I feel about coaching. I think that Alexis does a pretty good job of fucking things up on her own. Maybe she just really has met her match. This is like a magical year of magical thinking for Alexis Bellino. And she's just met this man who's opened the doors to like behaving worse than she could have ever imagined with Jim. So that's something to be proud of. And also, I think the episode, this is one of the wildest episodes that I've recorded of recent. I think it's all of the energy that has stayed dormant, like one of the mushroom aliens on The Last of Us has risen. It has heard things, smelled things, seen things, and is ready to come back to life. It's not really a spoiler. They're mushroom people on The Last of Us, zombies or whatever. Anyway, continuing on, how could a Housewives podcast episode not include a shout out to my king, Pedro Pascal? The other moment that I thought was incredibly fascinating was Gina's conversation with her ex and his girlfriend, but also fiance. But then they used the term commitment ceremony, which I found interesting. And then she was saying, like, I'm going to change my name, but not legally. So I assume they're getting legally married. If not, you could just call him Jax, who was legally married but did not know how to sign or check a box for divorce documents and found himself in some viral water this week. Was it hot? Was it lukewarm? Was it just wild? Who's to say? I really appreciated Gina's conversation. I also understand with the like morsels that she's given us that it appears Travis's dealings with his ex-wife has just become so much worse apparently over the years. I wonder how that has been influenced by Gina publicly being so like happy with Travis in prior seasons. I don't, you know, I obviously don't have any details about Travis's separation or divorce or that battle. I'm just going off of what's shared on the show. But if there is such a huge, huge space between the ability for Travis and his ex to co-parent, I could assume a certain level of that has increased since he has become a little bit of like a public personality because his long-term girlfriend is a Real Housewife of Orange County. I assume that's an extra pickle to an already pickled dish. Like that, it just seems like an incredibly toxic environment. And Lord knows that Travis has been there to support Gina at many, many moments where she's been, you know, hitting bottom. And it's unfortunate, but also, what do you do in that situation? Like, if you're surrounded by toxic energy and you have kids to think about, should Gina sacrifice her mental health to stay in a house that has become incredibly difficult? She's obviously still with Travis. As we know, you know, her friends have gone on Watch What Happens or in press and said they're happier than ever, which is great. It just sounds like an incredibly shitty situation. And also to think of how Gina and her ex-husband, whose name I just forgot, but I think is Matt, to see how far they've come. Like, Gina does not get enough credit for what she has done. I mean, there is that phrase of like, love your kids more than you hate your ex. What this man has done to her, the physical abuse that Gina experienced, like the severe, unbelievably horrifying domestic violence that this man exhibited against her, and their ability to work through that while she's still, as we, you know, saw on prior seasons, made the decision to, like, I think it was to stand in court. Did that actually end up happening? I forget. I think there was like a COVID, some sort of like COVID connection to the hearing, but that might be completely wrong. But Gina's decision to say, like, you need to be held accountable because I deserve it and also my kids, and not allowing him to like share a different truth or reality of what actually happened. And their ability to figure out a way to heal as a family without discounting how he behaved and be able to co-parent. Like, I just can't imagine it. And the ability to, for him to participate in Real Housewives also, because he would have been defined otherwise by this reprehensible act that he would have had every right to be defined by. But also seeing this man who I believe has worked on himself, worked to repair his relationship with someone he really, truly, in every sense of the word, hurt and harmed, and them having like a sit down in this house, it's almost a miracle that this has happened. And I have so much respect for Gina, and to see the way that she was dragged, I'm sure including by me, when she first joined the show, and just seeming like an odd, weird fit, and just like not she existed in a universe that we sort of didn't want her to give her permission to be in. She did not feel of the world of like Real Housewives and escapism and everything else. And I just think now she's grown and developed and matured as a housewife, sure, but also as a human person. And I find her incredibly interesting and so obviously grounded. And I know that she's still trying to protect Travis and the situation, and I'm sure her kids, and I'm sure his kids. And there's just something about her where I was like, the fact that they're able to have these sit downs and she's, you know, throwing over some bowls of meatballs while Meatballs the dog is like trotting in looking for a snack. And she's talking about, you know, how she wishes she had the kind of relationship with Travis's ex that she does with Matt. Is it Matt or Michael? I think it's Matt. With Matt's girlfriend / fiance is unbelievable. And I just think she should really be commended. And I'm thankful for her that she has a relationship with this woman. And she's emotional talking about like, my kids, I couldn't dream of a better stepmom for my kids. That is so beautiful. And I think potentially healing for people to watch back home who maybe have had some sort of glimpses of like incredibly acrimonious breakups, or maybe you came from a family where you're a child of divorce, where you've experienced something, and just potentially find that moment healing. I did personally. I just was like, this is just incredible to see. And I really appreciated it. And speaking of families, I really was astounded by Katie sharing her 40th birthday to herself, and also the gift to herself and her family of planning a trip to South Korea to see her and meet, for, you know, someone she hasn't seen since she was a bebé, her biological mom. And the ability of tracking her down and the connection of them like going to dinner, and she doesn't understand Korean phrases as well as her daughter does, who's learning the language and the culture, and to think of them all traveling together. The gift that Katie is going to give this woman in South Korea of, like, I would assume some level of potentially, I know it's multi-layered, of like forgiveness. I forgive you. I thank you for doing this. I also need you now because there is a part of me that was not filled that will be filled by having this connection. I am not a child of adoption. I do not want to speak for Katie's experience. I'm just sharing what I kind of felt in watching that moment and watching her talk about the need to do this, especially at such a like monumental birthday. Apologies for coughing. Monumental birthday and occasion. And just sharing that with us. I don't know what's going to end up happening with Katie and Heather. And also, I think Katie and, I know Katie and Gina and Emily, I think, aren't great from recent press or whatever. And the whole thing is like, we find out she's a liar or something later in the season. Who knows if that actually happens? I don't even care at this point. I'm just really thankful for what Orange County is doing in between the high drama, sadness, weirdness, insane toxicity, also LOLs, because I think what we saw this on the most recent episode, I'm about to say this week, but I'm like obviously behind. No longer caught up as of this AG on Orange County, Salt Lake City or next. But what we were able to see specific to like thinking about family connections and healing and growth and what happens when that's not achieved through Gina's story, through Katie's, I just found wonderful. And also Katie's son, Bandit, maybe, whose name I think I just fucked up. So apologies to the child who's certainly not listening to this podcast. I hope. LOL. When he asks his mom, like, what was your birth name? And she tells him. And then he stands up and says, I love you, and uses that name. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, I was verklempt. I just thought to myself, this is so beautiful. And I know that Katie doesn't take that for granted, but I also just want to say out loud, oral friendship contract, don't take this for granted. This is a beautiful, I'm sure her son gives her thousands of beautiful moments throughout the day, but I saw this one on television and was like, holy shit, if you could frame a scene, that would be the one. Because I just thought, I mean, children, kids are them, just the darndest. I just thought to myself, I mean, there's that whole like, are you smarter than a fifth grader? Are you emotionally more mature than this kid who's like maybe 8 or 11? I mean, I just really appreciated it. And also, while we're talking about Katie's family, has anybody spent a moment to talk about how hot Matt is? That's his name, right? I'm getting very confused with the Matts. Very attractive. And also the kind of casual, I don't know, golf style, you know, hoodie that also kind of works for dinner. Just great. Just really great. He's giving me kind of Jonathan Schindler energy, Heather Thompson's husband, not physically, but just in terms of like nice, normal guy who I think is a great husband. He just gives me nice, normal guy who's a great husband. And if I could just make an ask, you know, make a wish style since my surgery is 2 weeks away. Just kidding. If I could just make an ask to editors that in any future couples night plus Shannon and her dog scenes or whatever, can we just get as many reaction shots from Katie, Janella, and her husband, Matt, as humanly possible? Because at a certain point after the season, they're going to become accustomed to this. But while they're not, I would really appreciate just seeing their shock and confusion, because so much of it genuinely felt organic. And I don't think that Matt, if his name is Matt, Golfman, knows exactly where he is, but he just seems like such a good guy. And I really appreciate it. I like Matt being there. I like Shane being there, not wanting to be there, but also I think probably a little wanting to be there. I really did. And there were two flashbacks that made me feel a certain way, both involving sort of Emily. One was the flashback of like, don't use the phrase a little bitch in front of Shane, because it referenced the moment when Kelly Dodd called him one. And that was completely out of pocket. But that flashback did make me laugh. The other thing I did not like, even a little bit, which was a flashback, was the editors deciding in a conversation which Emily is talking specifically about triggers associated with body weight. So they decided to flashback to a scene from however long ago, doesn't matter, that includes someone, I think it was Eddie, quite literally stating her body fat percentage. That was so unnecessary. And when you are listening to a woman talk about the fact that numbers can be triggers, and she's literally talking about how triggering a dress size number is for her, and you motherfuckers do one worse than Heather Dubrow's confessional by including that flashback, it's not about the number itself. It's about the triggers for shame. Shame, not Shane, shame. I just thought to myself, okay, Heather Dubrow isn't listening, but are none of y'all? Why did you do that? They already did too much with Emily previously. I think I remember that scene from that season. They included the scale. They didn't need to, but they decided to. For whatever fucking reason, it wasn't necessary when she did this weigh-in. And for them to include that at that moment, I just thought it was completely fucked up. I was like, can you not give this woman an ounce here of like the ability not to add on things that she might find triggering? It just was too much. I was just like, you know what, editors, but I still love you guys because you made me laugh so many fucking times over the course of this two episode. And I'm sure that there's stuff I forgot about, but I mean, also, I don't know. Did I mention the fact that Shannon was using a neti pot? Was she using a neti pot when they flashed to her with the scrunchie and Archie Bedore's bedtime carrot? I think she was putting some water up her nose. And that was just a tough switch of scenes. You know, there was a lot for poor sweet Shan, but she had a Hallmark, whatever, you know, new beginning. New decade, looked gorgeous, looked phenomenal. Unfortunately, you know, did butt dial Tamra, who enjoyed every moment of it. And also is having some problems trying to express genuine empathy for Shannon because she's just having too much fun, which is something I also just have to sidebar before I wrap this episode and say, shout out to Tamra Judge, who I guess announced that she is going to come in all guns blazing at the reunion because she feels like someone, wink, wink, has hired bots. And that's why she's sustained so many negative critiques on social media. It's not that the audience is upset at her behavior. It's that someone in her cast, wink, wink, has purchased bots or done some bot farming to make it seem like, you know, like Russia and Iran are less nervous about the upcoming election than they are whether or not Tamra is going to lose a poll on Watch What Happens Live. The idea that democracy has been broken because she thinks that Shannon's going to pull out her Amex. Are you not paying attention to what's happening with Shannon financially? Even though I'm sure this wasn't like a large lift, but also the woman gets on a FaceTime with one of her kids and is like, how do I make the screen stop shaking? This is not a lady who understands what an app is. You say to her to swipe left and she goes for like the windshield on her car. If she's able to drive, I actually don't know where she is with the sip and puff situation, but I find it incredibly laughable. This is where I'm like, Tamra, you're spending way too much fucking time with Teddy Joe. Like, this is what happened from one carrot to another. Stick with Archie Bedore's, because this is what happens. You become a conspiracy theorist and you're like, people don't hate me. It's someone bought hate on the internet. No, bitch. Like, we really do not like what you have done. We really don't. We don't. Oops, sorry. My Instagram just opened with George Michael singing Freedom. We really genuinely do not like what you have done. And we've said it loudly. And we're probably going to continue saying it. Some of us overstepping, which unfortunately happens. But it is something. And listen, we got through it. We're caught up on Orange County. We are caught the fuck up. Noting we're not really caught up because I still need to watch Emily's Watch What Happens, Tamara's Watch What Happens, Bryce Sanders' interview with Emily and Gina. And I think one other thing that I forgot but will remember at some point in time. So there we are. Next step, Salt Lake City. Couldn't be more thrilled. So excited. I've heard great things. I would expect nothing less. The standard for Salt Lake is so fucking high when it comes to just entertainment factor and laughter. And I'm ready. I'm ready for it. Whatever tomorrow, but also possibly Monday, will bring. And Potomac's on the horizon. Happy Potomac weekend, everyone. Again, Lashana Tova. How better to celebrate a new year than with a new season of Real Housewives of Potomac? I'm thankful to those ladies for their services to us and our nation. And I'm cautiously optimistic that it's going to be a solid ep. Cautiously optimistic. Am I optimistic? I'm cautiously optimistic. And I think that's a pretty good place to be. So anyway, thanks so much for listening to this episode. A wild energy throughout. If you want to follow me on Instagram, you can at Dame Galley. I will be sharing that photo that I mentioned from Ryan and Jen's dick pic shop, which is something they posted by choice. And I love that journey for them. Don't forget the I. There's no I in team, nor is there in their hashtag dick pic merch. Well, there is actually one I, but there's not two I's. So there's no two I's in team, nor are there two I's in their dick pic merch. And put that on a bumper sticker. Why don't you? Hopefully you won't get a letter sent to you by Jim Bellino's attorney. But, you know, we should all be so lucky. Happy Hanukkah. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. You can sign up for the Andy Scrolls Patreon. It's the number one way to support the pod. Three episodes went out this week. Three bonus episodes. You can listen to them at patreon.com/AndyScrolls. Sign up for the premium tier. You can kiki with me, yours truly, and have a Zoom sesh or record a Patreon episode. You could have your own tagline. I'll come up with one. That's always fun. And if you are signing up for the premium tier, which I would love and appreciate, would love to record those before October 16th, because after that, be out of commission for just a little bit. Thanks in the meantime for listening to this. Can't wait to hear your thoughts and feels. DM me your satchels of gold on Instagram, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things Kelly Cloran, names in honor of her holiness, Kelly Cloran Ben Simone. And I might include them in an upcoming Patreon episode. And on that note, good night and good luck. And thank you once again to Orange County. This is me wrapping an episode 15 minutes ago. One of my favorite things to do. It's a tradition here at AGHQ that I say good night and good luck. And then 45 minutes later, actually stop recording. Just want to thank again Orange County for being the cough medicine internally and externally, better than a gal could ever wish for or want. Truly a magical, wonderful experience to watch both of those episodes back to back. Not that I want to make this into a thing of being behind, but if you are behind, let us be so fortunate that we have the opportunity to watch television excellence back to fucking back. This is the gift that we deserve after New Jersey. And that's that on that. All right. Talk to you soon, guys. Thanks so much for listening and bye-bye.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.